work. Call the Education Policy Committee together in order. Please to sit at the table. Yes, I clearly haven't had enough coffee today. Thank you, members. We have House File 1116 before us, but first, we have a quorum, and Representative Jordan, have you had a chance to look at the minutes for March 3rd?
Yes.
Would you like to move the minutes for March 3rd?
So moved.
Representative Jordan has moved the minutes for March 3rd. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Minutes for Tuesday, March 3rd have been approved. Thank you. A little tongue-tied today. All right. So, members, like I said, we have House File 1116 before us today. As a reminder, we heard this bill during our March 4th meeting last year, so we're not going to we don't have any testifiers here. I could briefly open up for public testimony per Rule 6.20 if there is any, but so if there is any, people go ahead and sign up with the page. So before we start, I'll just move the bill. I move House File 1116 before the committee in order to be placed back on the general registry. And Representative Lee, would you like to? That's right. You have an author's amendment. Would you like to describe your author's amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. That the author's amendment, the A1, just update the effective date to 2021 and 2022.
Thank you. We have the A1 amendment. Representative Christensen, would you like to move the A1 amendment?
So moved.
The A1 amendment has been moved before us. And is there any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Lee, would you like to briefly describe your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. So House File 1116, as amended, is a bill regarding early childhood family educators and adult basic educators, and is proposed to address the inequities that our early childhood family education and adult basic education teachers face. These educators are required to be fully licensed, but they do not have access to the same protections as traditional K-12 teachers. And what my bill does is to fix this inequity and to change the law so that these teachers are covered under the continuing contract law and Teacher Tenure Act. These employees would get more predictable notice of planned layoffs and would be entitled to due process upon proposed termination that all other teachers currently receive. It also enables them to participate in the full complement of activities under the Teacher Development and Evaluation Law.
Thank you, Representative Lee. As I said before, Representative Lee doesn't have testifiers here today because we took full testimony on March 4th, but is there anybody in the public that wanted to testify on this bill briefly? Seeing none, member questions. Representative Erickson.
Well, Madam Chair, this is not really a question for Representative Lee, but for you, what's the path this bill's going to follow?
Representative Erickson, I forgot when I made the motion. I'm so sorry about that. I did say to sit on the general registry.
Madam Chair, in speaking with our researcher, who is also the researcher for early education, he indicated to me that Representative Pinto really would like to see these kinds of bills when they deal with early childhood.
Thank you for bringing that up. Last year we laid it over and it went in our policy bill, and Representative Pinto had not asked for it. I will have a discussion with him on the floor since Representative Lee is before us. We will move it to the floor for now, and if he wants to see it, I'd be more than happy to have it re-referred to early childhood education. Because ABE teachers are under the K-12 purview. So members, any other questions? Okay, I will renew my motion that House File 1116 be moved to the general registry. Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
House File 1116 is moved and placed on the general registry.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Lee. All right, members, and I will definitely talk to Representative Pinto on the floor today about that. Next on the agenda is House File 3881. I'm going to briefly give the gavel over to our vice chair. know it's already been a long day when that's the most exercise we've gotten today. Table. All right.
All right, members, we have in front of us House File 3881 of Chair Joachim's on the agenda today. Chair Joachim, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House File 3881 be re-referred to the Education Finance Division.
All right. Chair Joachim moves that House File 3881 be re-referred to the Education Finance Division. I believe you have an author's amendment to get the bill in shape that you'd like it. Would you like to move your amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
Great. Pardon me. Go ahead.
Sorry, Madam Chair. The A1 amendment incorporates some of the changes that have been requested from folks that had concerns about the bill. So I'd like to put that on, and then we'll have a discussion on the full bill, unless anybody has questions on the A1 amendment.
Okay. So Chair Joachim renews her motion to adopt the A1 amendment. Are there any further discussions? Hearing none, those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. The bill is amended before the committee. Representative Joachim, would you please present your bill?
Yes, thank you, members. Thank you, Madam Chair. Like I said, we had the A1 amendment to address some of those concerns. The bill is pretty much in the shape that we had when...
Would you please move your microphone just a little?
I don't know if it's turned on very well. Here.
Okay.
Let me just go like this. Is that a little bit better?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the A1 amendment addressed some of the concerns that folks had, and it kind of got the bill close to the shape it was last year. But because of that, I wanted to make sure that we had still had some testimony and time for questions. So this is the bill about education support professionals. It's very near and dear to my heart, as you heard last year. We had testimony, so I'll keep my comments brief. It requires education support specialists, or ESPs, also known as paraprofessionals, to be given 16 hours of paid professional development or training per year. The bill has an appropriation to pay for this that will be worked out in the Education Finance Committee. We're still trying to work out the distribution model and how it's going to be delivered to the schools. There's also a requirement that ESPs who work with individual students with disabilities must be given paid time to review a student's IEP or time to collaborate with the student's teacher regarding the plan. Many of these requirements are already happening in our schools. This bill would just allow us to not only make sure they're happening, but also make sure that the schools have the funding to do so. Once again, this session, our committee has heard from teachers, parents, administrators, and school boards how important trained and qualified support staff are in meeting our students' needs and meeting them where they're at. Last interim, I worked as an ESP with kindergartners with special needs in our level 3 and in our level 3 EBD program in Aquila Elementary in St. Louis Park, and I've seen how effective professional training can be. Even though I started at the beginning of the school year this year, there was still 5+ hours of online modules dealing with health and safety that I had to view on my own time without pay. I was happy to do it, but our ESPs deserve to get paid for their time when they're training to do their jobs. St. Louis Park is not alone in trying to find money for training. Many districts are forced to pick and choose what they can afford versus the training that the ESPs as fully functioning team should have so that they could serve our students better. While this is my story, I know it's not a unique one, so I'd like to turn the rest of my testimony over to Michelle Denard here and Becky Hespin. Michelle is a special ed ESP in the Osseo District, and Becky is an ESP in the Osseo District who is on leave right now. Actually, I'm leaving from Park Center High School, so I'll pull both chairs over.
Welcome to our committee. Would you please identify yourself, and then you may begin your testimony.
Hi, I'm Michelle Denard, and I'm a special ed ESP in the Osseo School District.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. My name is Michelle Denard. I am a special education paraprofessional in the Osseo School District. I have worked in the Osseo area schools for 15 years. I love my job, and I want to help all students. I work with students with special needs in the transition program, ages 18 to 21. My students have behavior and emotional disorders and learning difficulties. fetal alcohol syndrome, bipolar disorders, and other mental health and physical diagnoses, etc. These are very complicated diagnoses, and proper training is essential to learn how to best support all students. It's important that all students' needs are met, and no matter how complicated their situation. For example, in our program, we might get a new student who uses a wheelchair. As a special education paraprofessional, we are the staff required to transfer the student out of the wheelchair in order for the student to use the restroom. It is unsafe and inappropriate for us to learn how to meet the student needs 30 minutes prior to helping the student. We not only need to learn how to meet the student's physical needs, but we need to know what the student's IEP requires for supporting goals. Without time set aside for this important learning, we do not have a chance to do this. We might also get a student whose behavior escalates suddenly. We need to know the triggers that cause the student to escalate and what to do to help the students calm down or de-escalate. Teaming up with the teachers, case managers to learn techniques will help us greatly. Most importantly, it will help the student to be successful. Right now, we are not given this essential time to collaborate with the teachers at all. On behalf of all the Minnesota ESPs, I ask you to please support this bill so we can have proper tools we need to help all students. Thank you, Representative Joachim, for authoring this bill. And thank you, Chair and the committee members, for the opportunity to speak with you today.
Thank you very much. We have another testifier. Would you please identify yourself and then you may begin your testimony?
Yes, my name is Becky Hespin. I am an educational support professional in the Osseo area schools. On leave from Park Center High School to work as a full-time release president. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. Again, my name is Becky Hespin. As an educational support professional in the Osseo Area School District for 28 years, I have firsthand experience across several ESP positions, and I recognize the value of professional development for ESPs. I also have the privilege of serving as a full-time release president, working with over 800 ESPs in our school district, and I see personally the impact across the district for students and ESPs when professional development is not provided. The needs of students have changed significantly. Not only physical needs, academic needs, but mental health needs are more prevalent. There is a significant need for de-escalation strategies when working with students in any position. An ESP's first day of work is the first day of students. ESPs often cannot provide the basic tools to best meet the needs of our students. This can oftentimes be very negative because staff are not aware of behavioral triggers for the student, and that can have an impact on the entire day for the student. Staff are not provided training on using adaptive equipment for the physical needs of our students. This is a safety issue not just for the student, but as for the staff member as well. Also, districts are having a difficult time retaining ESPs because of inadequate training. Just this year, I'm aware of a couple of times where ESPs began work, went to lunch, and never came back because they didn't have any training and didn't know what they were getting into. Providing paid training to ESPs is essential, especially when working with the most vulnerable students who may have physical, academic, and/or behavioral disorders. ESPs are oftentimes the one trusted adult with students, and yet ESPs are not provided the professional development that's needed in their profession. Thank you, Representative Joachim, for authoring this bill that will positively impact our students and those that have chosen this as a profession. Thank you, committee members, for the opportunity to share my experiences today, and I ask for your support for the bill.
Thank you, Ms. Brennan. I think there might be a couple other testifiers. Is Pat Brennan? Oh, excuse me, you were Hespin. My apologies. Pat Brennan is, and then Kim Kanikiu. So you may go ahead and identify yourself and then begin your testimony. Thank you.
My name is Pat Brennan. I'm from
And would you mind speaking closer to the microphone?
Okay. My name is Pat Brannon. I'm from Malacca School District. I'm a paraprofessional for 6 years. Chair and members, my name is Pat Brannon. I'm a paraprofessional in the Malacca School District and a member of the SEIU Local 284. When my small business went under, some of my friends suggested that I go to work at the school as a sub, and I absolutely loved it. Now I'm a full-time paraprofessional for 6 years who helps students develop work skills both inside and outside of school.
Excuse me, I just need you to be a little bit closer to the microphone.
Okay.
I don't know if we can get it turned up. Is the volume up all the way?
This room is really weird where these mics are loud and these aren't.
Okay, thank you. We're just having a little bit of hard time hearing you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Can you? Mm-hmm. All right. At Malacca, we work hard to educate and empower and engage all students to become caring and responsible citizens who will succeed in an ever-changing world. That mission is to be made harder. Our school district is facing a $1.3 million cut, which has been lessened by a referendum recently, which cuts it down to $621,000. And one of them, the things that they are going to cut is our para training days. That's especially challenging because our current training isn't good enough to provide us with all the skills and tools that we need. We need time to learn about the students that we're going to be working with, what strategies work, what strategies have been tried and failed. We're supposed to get an hour with the teachers to go over IEPs, but at the training time is always scheduled at the same time the teachers have workshops, so we end up with very little time to collaborate. When you don't have the tools and the skills that you need to create an unsafe situation for students and staff arise. I know a few things about the job I'm training, but some of the things that we're asked to do and figure out would go just plain unsafe. When I first started with the district, I was working with a student one-on-one with a trach tube, but no one taught me how to care for, change, unplug the tube, and I'm not afraid to admit that it was scary. The training provisions in this bill will help Malacca kids and kids across the state and all the students, adults who care for them. Thank you for bringing this important issue forward, and thank you for giving me the time to speak today.
Thank you very much, Ms. Brannon. And I think next we have Ms. Kaniakua.
Yep. My name is Kim Kaniakua, and I'm a paraeducator at Fridley. Chair and members, my name, again, is Kim Kaniakua. I am a paraeducator in the Fridley School District and a member of SEIU Local 284. Mm-hmm. Too often in schools across Minnesota, paraeducators are asked to learn on the job how to support our most vulnerable students. We're thrown in without knowing all the unique needs of our kids, which creates an unsafe environment for us and our students. Just as importantly, it's impossible for us to support students to learn, grow, and become more independent if we don't know their goals and education plan. Oftentimes, we don't even have time to read the IEP. One of the students in my school currently has vision issues. They had to change paras mid-year, and their new para didn't know how to help that student or even who to ask to get the support that they needed. When I started working as a para, I answered an ad in the paper. That's how long ago it was. At that time, we were trained on autism and how to support students on the spectrum. That training was valuable and important, but now we know that to best serve our students and meet the entire range of our students' needs, we need a lot more. For instance, training in de-escalation strategies, trauma, multicultural awareness, mental health, just to name a few. Just learning all the terminology, it takes a lot of time and effort. Our union has fought to make sure that paras are included in our all-district training in Fridley, and that's important, but it's not enough. This bill would allow paras to meet with the IEP teams to learn about our students' unique and individual needs before the beginning of the school year. IEPs are most effective when paras working with a student know the plan's goals and objectives. This bill would also give us the time before working with students to develop the skills and tools needed to best support them. I had been a stay-at-home mom when I started working as a para 17 years ago. I fell in love with it, and I never left. Our jobs are very difficult, but they're also incredibly rewarding. This small change will make a big difference in our lives and in the lives of our students. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. I believe we have perhaps Mr. Heller. Did you want to make a statement? Okay, thank you. Okay. So, members, we have a list here. Representative Barr. Oh, hey. I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Heller. Yes, that was
the last testifier. You may be our last testifier, and then we'll go to member questions. My apologies.
My name is Rick Keller, unofficial representative, twice exceptional and print disabled. You'll find that in the governor's bill, by the way, twice exceptional under the section 10 on lines. So I'm come here to testify on this bill today regarding paraprofessionals. And the thing is, I've asked that they would insert on line through the chair, and they want to be willing to do an oral amendment on a line 31.11. After disability, add in twice exceptional. And the reason I'm providing that is because if you single out disability only, not the gifted and talented, because currently in Minnesota statute 120B15 has yet to define what twice exceptional is. This would give paraprofessionals a better understanding that these students have gifts, and perhaps the school district may have recognized them. But currently, the current IEPs are not required to identify twice exceptional or considerate, even after a comprehensive evaluation. So that's a suggestion I'm providing for you today, because I'm hoping that providing more ability for paraprofessionals to understand not only the special design instruction, including a special design instruction on accommodations regarding assistive technology for the people with print disabilities, is very relational for parents to know what's in that student's IEP. One thing that is missing, I'd like to express, that teachers are not required, the regular education teachers are not required to look at the IEP. That's all I have to say. Thank you for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Chair Yao Kim, do you have a response to that?
Madam Chair, I think this bill's moving to finance, and we can talk about that. I want to talk to the stakeholders about how they felt about it.
Thank you very much. All right, now we will be moving on to our member testimony, our questions, and Representative Barr, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Joachim, reference to lines 4.7 and 4.8 on your bill. How do you plan to figure out the dollar figure for that, and when can we see an amendment for that?
Chair Joachim.
Madam Chair, Representative Barr, the bill is moving into finance, so we'll be seeing that in finance.
Representative.
Madam Chair, how are you going about figuring that out? I mean, we've heard testifiers here that they need some training in this, some training in that. Do we know how many paraprofessionals need training? How much training do they need? How many there are? And we're just going to start multiplying. I'm just kind of curious how you plan on getting to that point.
Representative Joachim.
Madam Chair, we were actually working on that distribution model. We just didn't get it drafted into this bill yet, and we're going to work on that in finance.
Representative. Thank you.
Unfortunately, the answer, Madam Chair, a lot of the times is it has to be scalable depending on what the targets are.
All right. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question was for Ms. Brannon. If she could come back down.
Ms. Brannon, would you just identify yourself once again?
Okay, Pat Brannon from Malacca.
Thank you for coming back down, and thanks for being here today to give your testimony. You'd stated that a lot of times you had these IEP meetings scheduled with the teachers, and then the teachers couldn't show up because they had other training or other obligations at that time. And I wondered if you or the union spoke to the administration so that that those there was no timing conflict, and if so, in that conversation, did you stress the importance of the meetings, or did the unions stress that for you?
At our last negotiation, it was stressed about it. The school board gave us no answer to that.
Representative.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brennan. Next, we have Representative Baker.
Madam Chair. Maybe my question is more designed around being an employer and how it sounds like we're not paying hourly employees for working. So my question is, and again, I have no reason to believe that our school districts aren't doing everything they can to take care of their employees. I'm not suggesting anything, but this year, last year actually, a very aggressive wage and wage theft bill was passed by this body that I supported at the very end because there are some people that are not getting paid for what they're doing. Maybe my question is simply, this isn't about collective bargaining. It's not about anything like that. If you're an hourly employee and you have to be required to either go through some orientation, any kind, I don't care if it's 16 hours or 2 hours, you should be paid. So are we missing something here? Because teachers are paid a salary. I get how they need to sort of expand their role and what they do, because that's what they have signed up for. These paraprofessionals that are doing amazing work with our kids, I am just trying to understand where and how did we as a public education system start either requiring people to not get paid by the hour, and why do we need a bill to do this when we've got other wage laws in place to make sure that people are protected? Can you help me understand as an employer why we're doing it this way and why the Department of Labor is not handling this? Because I'm not questioning, again, I don't want to make it seem like I'm not happy with our districts. I am. But how did this fall through the cracks?
Representative Yalkeem.
Madam Chair, Representative Baker, I'll try to answer in the best way I can. I think basically the reason why I brought forward this bill was to kind of set a floor on what's required for training. Right now, there's not a lot of requirement around how to train or what to train paras for. We have to do like the bloodborne pathogen model, whatever school policy models, and a lot of those are online. Some districts give you time to do that before school starts. Sometimes they don't, or they put it during that the week where teachers are in preparing their rooms and they're having that time. And I think that kind of goes to what Miss, I think it was Brennan said, is that we had to do our IEPs during that week when the teachers were setting up the room. They gave us 2 day paid days to come in and do that. But the teachers were so busy, we couldn't even sit down and talk to them about the IEPs. So I think there's a lot of stuff that's kind of moving parts and falling through the cracks. And this is just a way to set a base of saying, this is what's expected. We still also want to be able to give local control to the districts in this bill so they get to decide, you know, there's whether or not they're going to do this. So much of it has to be done before the person's hired, but then we're worried about when people are hired halfway through the year, to do it within the 30 days, for the districts to decide what training they need, because every district's going to look different. You might be a para that's in a school that has no medically fragile kids. So why would you have to do training on medically fragile things like how to toilet a child that has a trach tube or things like that? So we still wanted to give that to. I don't know if it's as much of a wage theft issue when we don't have a base of what's required for training. So we're trying to set the base first. And yes, I strongly believe people should be getting paid for the work they're doing. So that's why that's in here too.
Well, and just a final comment, Madam
Representative.
Chair, is just that I think we provide the school districts with a lot of money every year, and we want to leave it with them to make the best decisions. They know how to educate their teachers, their support staff, their administrators. So I want to make sure that we aren't getting so much in the details of this. And again, I just want to remind maybe again the chair that I want to see reduction in paperwork so that my bill maybe can get heard sometime in the committee. I know it's not as simple as it sounds, and you and I have had a conversation about this, and I want to keep exploring this, but I hear you saying we've got to make sure that we're taking the right amount of time to prepare our paras and our teachers, more so our paras in this case, to be ready for this. I just want to make sure that we're minimizing that extra time so they're not reading 10 extra pages per student, because that really will add up if that information isn't required or it's not doing the results that we're hoping it can do. And I want to take a deeper dive into that sometime. So I think this was just this opportunity to, instead of just expanding it and throwing money on it, let's reduce the requirements of what we're doing if it's not giving us the results in some of those things that we need. So just appreciate that consideration for later on. Thank you.
Representative Yalkeem, would you like to respond?
While a lot of our testifiers are focused on kiddos with special needs, a lot of our paras work in mainstream in pulling kids out. So as we've heard with Representative Moran's trauma-informed education, there's a lot of other needs kids have with paras that might not be special education paras, but mainstream paras that need that training too. So that's why we're trying to just set that floor.
Thank you. Next, Representative Erdahl, would you like to make a comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, I have a question. It's and you, I think maybe you've answered it in part already. I'm wondering, are there any consistent standard qualifications regarding education or training for paraprofessionals in Minnesota?
Representative Joachim.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, I have to remember because I took the test a few years ago. There are some online testing for academics that you do have to take. Every district's a little bit different. I'd almost have to pitch it over to phone a friend because all I know is what I had to do for St. Louis Park and Hopkins. So I'm not quite sure what standards there are, but there are academic tests they have you take as well. Or you can also, it's been a while since I took them, so I have to find out. That's a good question.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Another question follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my wife was also a paraprofessional at one time, and I don't recall that she had to do any special training. But what I'm beginning to realize is that across the state, there may be schools that have some exceptional preparation and training for paras, and there may be schools that do very little. And you are encouraging a training model of some type here, which with regular classroom teachers and paras, I think is an important thing to do. I have proclaimed the need for a model for consistency in other areas in education. And so this kind of goes along with that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Any response?
No, thank you, Representative Erdahl. And I'm going to check on that. I know there's different qualifications if you already have a BA going in as a para, so I'm going to check. I'm looking at nonpartisan staff to see if they know. It might just be best practices. So I'll have to get that information because now you've piqued my curiosity as well.
Thank you. All right, we will move on to Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair.
I thought we were going to move on.
Moving backwards now. No, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I understand this. The only thing, the concern I have, Chair Joachim, is, you know, it has the words like on page 3, line 3.2, it says professional development must be provided annually to all professionals. Then you go down to line 3.7, a school administrator must provide an annual certification of compliance with this requirement to the commissioner. You know, again, I go back to my negotiation days. We have administrators and superintendents, which we pay pretty well, I think, to make some of these decisions. If they think they need extra training for a paraprofessional, and again, they're not perfect, okay? But I've never met more caring people than, principals, teachers, and superintendents. They want to do what's best. I've always sensed that desire. Even if I disagree with them, I sense they want to do what's best for the students. So it just is another mandate that's tying the hands and saying a one-size-fits-all, and it's taken away discretion from supervisor discretion from the administrators, and then requiring them to do another certification and paperwork, which they already spend way too much time doing paperwork rather than spending time with the students and the staff. So those are my concerns, so give me some pushback so I feel better about this.
Thank you, Representative. Chair Joachim.
Madam Chair, first I just want to clear this up for the audio too, and this is just one of my pet peeves. Please refer to me as Representative Joachim up here because there are people that are listening and when we're not on camera, and if they're listening to this in the far future because they're bored, they will know that there's one chair of the committee right now. So just throwing that out there. Yeah, please do. Just want to make it easier for people following along at home because I know everybody is desperately doing that while eating popcorn. So that's I really think we need to have a base model, and I understand your worry about having reporting back. There's still a lot of flexibility in this bill for administrators to decide what the training is, when it's going to happen. We just put a little bit of bookends on there, and we want to make sure we have highly qualified people working with our kids in school. So I feel very comfortable setting a floor. I feel comfortable as I have not heard that much of pushback yet, but I'll talk to stakeholders because I'm sure we'll hear it now about the requirement to the commissioner. But this bill is moving to finance. But I feel very comfortable about the needle we've thread here of between setting a floor and local control.
Follow up, Representative.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, and I would just respond. I think the superintendents and the principals, they want qualified people too, and they're going to do the best of their ability to do that. And here we're just adding another mandate onto them. And the problem with it is, from my standpoint, is that once this is in law, then the next thing you know, it can grow, okay? And pretty soon, you add additional things to it, requirements, and pretty soon, it makes things very difficult for the local administrators to effectively meet the needs of the students they have with their staff. So that's just my opinion. You can disagree with it. Thank you.
Follow up on that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, it is a mandate. It's a floor that we want all our pairs to set, and if it's going to grow, it's going to have to come through the legislature again.
Thank you, Representative. Next we have Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Joachim, on line 3.12, you've used the phrase paid time. Now, this is a student with a disability. Mm-hmm. Do you expect the state to reimburse for that paid time that you're referring to in that section 2?
Chair, Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Erickson. It says paid time or time during the school day to talk with the teacher. So there's your flexibility there. And I do not know all the rules on the reimbursement rates through Medicare, Medicaid. I do know of some because I've had to do hand-to-hand off the school bus, and you do have to sign for that. And then if a student under the IEP needs help with dressing or undressing, that's a chargeable. And we have to take a PCA exam to be able to do that and fill out that paperwork as well. I am not sure reading an IEP would fall under that, though. I think that has to do with the educational aspect versus the physical need a child has, and that's usually the physical stuff is what we can charge back, if I understand. Like I said, the hand-to-hand contact off the bus, help with toileting, help with dressing. So I don't think there's anything you can charge for academic.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Erickson, response.
Representative Joachim, I think before this comes to finance, maybe we want to clarify any of that. My second question, Madam Chair, if you would indulge me, is in the paragraph 4. Will there have to be any negotiations with SIEU, which is the Union for Paraprofessionals, in regard to your stating that you want a minimum, and then it could go beyond that? Will there have to be any negotiation?
Representative
for the orientation and the professional development?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I think, like I said before, that this is a base. Anything that's going to be above it, I'm assuming, would have to be negotiated. This is a base that we're setting.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. And our last question from Representative Wazlowick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am really glad that you're bringing forward this bill. I'm not a para, but I work in a school-based childcare program, and we serve the same kids that we have in our school during the school day. And I have found myself woefully unprepared to work with some kids because was not provided an opportunity to understand more about specific kids' needs. So I really appreciate you bringing this forward. I think it's important that we have our paras be prepared to work with students and feel secure in their knowledge of what students need. So thank you for that. I do have a couple of questions just kind of sort of based on my knowledge of how things work with paras. I'm wondering if you can maybe talk about if this would apply for folks who are subbing as paras, if they would have time they're working with the same students, and I wonder if you could, if you know if this would have them have that time to review this information as well.
I might have to phone a friend to come down and answer that one.
Representative
Representative Joachim, is there somebody you're looking for?
I can't see who's shaking their head or nodding over there. So is there someone who could come down and answer that? I believe the answer is no, but I'm not positive. So.
Welcome to the committee. Would you please state your name and share your testimony or response?
Yes, Madam Chair, committee members, Jody Boer with Education Minnesota. And I'm sorry, I was reading something. Could you please repeat the question?
Representative.
Yeah, I was just wondering, so I know that there are folks who sub for paras when paras are out, and I'm wondering if this having to read this information, having the opportunity to read this information is part of what would be required for sub paras as well.
Ms. Baer.
Madam Chair, committee members, I do not believe that it includes sub paras.
Representative Wazlik, can follow up.
All right, thank you for that answer. I'm also, and I don't know if, again, this is my experience as a child care person, but we have paras who work in our child care program as well, and I don't know if there's any crossover between that in terms of if a para was working in a child care program, if they would, because it's not during the school day, I don't know if you know if that would be something that they would be able to see. I know that a lot of our child care staff, especially our leadership staff, are kind of in on those conversations around IEPs and what kids need, and so I don't know if the crossover happens once the paras are not during the school day.
Representative.
Representative Wazlik, you bring up really good questions that I'm not quite sure because we haven't talked about out-of-school day contact. And first, I want to thank you for the work you do because you're almost like we're almost like the grandparents dealing with the kids, and then we go, here you go. And then we go home, and then you get them when they're tired, want to be fed, and have been at school all day. So I can't even imagine some of the dysregulation behaviors that you're probably dealing with. I will have to get back to you as this goes to finance, and we can work some of that stuff out.
Ms. Baer, you had a response?
Madam Chair, committee members, I want to respond to the question previous because phoning a friend, I also got an update that if there is a long-term sub, which that's different employment parameters around long-term subs, then this may, in fact, apply to them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. Any other questions from our committee? No? All right. Well, if there is no further discussion on the bill, Chair Joachim, would you like to renew the motion that House File 3881, as amended, be re-referred to the Education Finance Division?
Madam Chair, first I wanted to say a few quick words. I forgot to mention that there's a letter from PACER in your packets of support. And that I just want to give a shout out to my fellow ESPs that work in our schools who provide some of the most important direct services to our students and especially our students with disabilities, as well as supports for basically the entire student population. We trust ESPs with very important caretaking tasks. They need professional development to be successful in their careers, and we owe them at least the chance to receive that training. You've heard testimony about how important the training is, and I sit before you with personal experience of how valuable it can be, and I ask for your support of this bill. And I would like to renew my motion that House File 3881, as amended, be moved to Education Finance.
Wonderful. Chair Joachim renews the motion that House File 3881, as amended, be referred to the Education Finance Division. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. House File 3881, as amended, is recommended for a re-referral to the Education Finance Division.
Members, we have House File 3800 up for consideration today. Representative Kunesh-Budin, would you like to move your bill?
Chair Joachim, I would like to move House File 3800 up for to be placed on the General Register.
Thank you, Representative Kunesh-Budin. Let's see here. I want to just get out the bill so I can see it. So we have House File 3800 before us. Representative Kunesh-Budin, would you like to start your testimony? Oh, first, quick, as a reminder, we had a full hearing and took public testimony in the provision of the bill last year, but today, in order to be fair, as fair as possible, we'll be taking time testimony from both those who are proponents of the bills and those who have concerns. So it'll be 10 minutes for each side, and we'd ask the testifiers to try to keep your comments to 2 minutes. But before we start the timer, we'll allow Representative Kunesh-Budin to present her bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill, 3800 is pretty straightforward, and we did hear this last year. And basically what it is ensuring that we have trained pedagogically sound, proven, experienced teachers in our classroom. Last week, we discussed removing barriers such as the MTLE test that too often stands in the way of teachers, especially our teachers of color. And this bill is setting forth high standards for the profession of teaching. We value those high standards and expectations, especially, for example, doctors, nurses, accountants, and building trades, and the same should be true for our teachers. But in 2017, the legislature changed our teaching license system in order to make it less complex. But what we really did was drastically reduce the requirements to teach in Minnesota classrooms. And we spend so much of our time here shoring up a high level of teacher qualifications and accountability. So we don't need to lower those standards. I'm all for the teaching license system to be a little bit easier to navigate, but we sure don't want to lower our standards. And that's why I'm introducing House File 3800 to improve the tiered system and restore our high standards for teaching. I do want to note that in this bill, nothing in it prevents highly qualified teachers from out of state from teaching in Minnesota. And you might remember that one of the big reasons last year proponents wanted to change the law in the first place. And I think our teachers, we owe it to our teachers and our students now and in the future in order to ensure that we have those high qualified students. So House File 38 will close the loophole that allows a candidate to attain a permanent Tier 3 license without having completed any teacher preparation, which is, I think we can all agree, critical to success. It will also give Tier 1 teachers the freedom to choose to be part of the teacher bargaining unit and the protection against any issues or exploitation. And so that's what House File 38 does, and we have a couple of testifiers that I would like to bring forward.
All right, Representative Kunesh-Budin, go ahead. Have your testifiers come forward. When you get up there, please state your name for the record, and then you can proceed with testimony, and we will start working on the timer.
Good afternoon, right. Madam Chair.
Ms. Alici, easy. Oh, we were going to have you go last.
Perfect.
Because you're neutral. You're neutral territory. So we're going to have the proponents go first for 10 minutes, and then those with concerns for 10 minutes, and then Switzerland go last. All right. So please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Caitlin Lillis. And good morning, or good afternoon. Sorry about that. Chair Joachim, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Caitlin Lillis. I'm a second grade teacher from Fergus Falls, Minnesota. Last year, I was here speaking to you as an aspiring educator while I was student teaching. Now I'm back with more experience and the same narrative. Content knowledge is not enough to prepare you for the classroom. My first day of school was one of the most exciting and also terrifying things that I've ever done. I believe that my university laid before me wonderful experiences to observe and experience the real workings of an elementary classroom. And yet there's only so much you can learn from a book and from professors. I'm learning every day from my 24 kiddos, and I am constantly looking back at my experiences as a student teacher. You need to use what you've learned and work with real students in real situations. And it is more than just knowing the academic content needed for the classroom. It is knowing how students work and what they need to be successful. In a time where we have so many extreme situations and diverse sets of learners, we need to work to prepare our teachers to accommodate for those students. For example, I have one little friend that can't read at a kindergarten level in second grade. This has also affected the rest of his academic areas. Without my training in early literacy and intervention programs, I would not know what to do with this little friend. On the other hand, I have a student who is far advanced and in need of challenges to keep them engaged. Without training, I would not know what was developmentally appropriate to give them. Beyond the academic needs of my classroom, there are so many students that have different levels of mental health needs. These students don't need a teacher who knows everything about one particular subject. They need a teacher who has trauma and mental health training, as well as a school that supports those needs. Classroom management is a huge part of my job. If I only focused on the content, I would not have any students learning. As a teacher, you need to have the ability to manage what is happening in your classroom, all of the levels of learning, and teaching them how to be little humans. Minnesota values high standards for many professionals. The same should be true for our teachers. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Name is Dennis Drawn. Can you hear me well? Name is yes. Dennis Drawn, educator at Osceola Area Schools. Good afternoon, Chair, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, my name is Dennis Drawn, and I'm one of the many educators of color across the state who are concerned about the current teacher tiered licensing system. People who aren't directly in the classroom fail to see the effect educators of color have on students who look like them. Anyone who knows me understands this is near to my heart. Educators don't get enough respect. We need to remove the financial barriers to getting a teaching degree, address the teacher pay gap, provide adequate school support staff, give educators a voice when important decisions are being made, provide mentors and on-the-job professional development. Do what is necessary to help us be successful at our jobs so people will want to enter the profession and grow there. Educators like me join the field of education, like those who become lawyers, doctors, police officers, and other public servants to combat a system of racism that isn't equitable for black and brown citizens. The tiered licensing system only sets us up for failure. It puts us in a situation that alienates us from our white colleagues when we are labeled as tier one or two and not given the proper tools to be successful and grow. It perpetuates that narrative of disrespect that educators endure by suggesting anyone can teach without preparation. The data on racial microaggressions shows that people of color are automatically assumed to be less qualified. If you ask my colleagues, you will find that a good number of us have been told that we were hired not because of our qualifications, but because of our color. Teachers of color leave at a rate 24% higher than white teachers, while slightly more than half of the licensed teachers in Minnesota are not working in our public schools. Minnesota is running an experiment on its students to see how little teacher training the state can require before it affects educational outcomes. They say the current licensure law will attract much needed educators of color to the profession. However, the number of teachers of color in the state is stalled at 4% even with the licensure law in place. If this experiment doesn't work, many students will miss out on a year of learning they won't get back. Why would you wait to gather data about how it's going? It is evident that all students benefit from having educators of color in their building. So here is what you can do. Fully fund the Increased Teacher of Color Act, fix the licensure loophole, and allow tier one teachers to organize around working conditions and fair compensation so they want to remain in the profession. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Drawn. Please state your name for the record.
And my name is Sarah Ford, and thank you, Madam Chair and representatives. I work for the Educator Policy Innovation Center at Education Minnesota. Teacher preparation that includes both content and pedagogical training correlates with higher student achievement. You have a handout that walks through this body of research that's about 60 years old, more thoroughly than I can do in 2 minutes. Academics have studied the question for decades, and it turns out, not surprisingly, that teachers are more effective when they are trained in both their content area and pedagogy. We have studies that conclude that expertise in content alone does not make an effective teacher, and we have a plethora of studies that show that a combination of content and content-specific and pedagogical mastery are key to student success. Emergency hires lead to lower test scores and achievement. Minnesota is not the first state to respond to the mass exodus from the ranks of the teaching profession by lowering credentials to become a licensed teacher. And that means academics have already had the opportunity to study what happens when large numbers of untrained people are put in classrooms. Minnesota students of color and our rural students were already, before 2017, most likely to be taught by teachers assigned outside of the field for which they were prepared or who have no preparation at all. Evidence from other states highlights the fact that these are the students who suffer the most harm in states with increasing numbers of underprepared teachers. We owe it to our students of color, to our rural students, to our special education students, in fact, to all of our students, to do better than to continue to lower standards for the people they are counting on so desperately. Naming the problem a teacher shortage has been a way to sabotage our ability to see what's happening here. Minnesota doesn't have a teacher shortage. In the past several decades, we have produced more trained teachers than we can use, though that trend is changing fast as fewer and fewer people are choosing to go into teaching in the first place. And as already been mentioned, there are tens of thousands of actively licensed teachers in Minnesota who choose not to apply for jobs. One out of three new teachers in Minnesota leaves the profession in the first 5 years. One out of three in the first 5 years, and teachers of color are leaving faster than anybody else. We can address this teacher exodus by looking carefully and honestly at why so many people leave the profession and why so few now aim for it to begin with. We can address the fact that we have underfunded our school system for years and that teachers leave again and again out of a frustration that they are unable to meet the needs of our students in a system so starved for resources, or we can continue to ignore those critical issues and pretend that the problem is just that it's too hard to get a license. It is our profound hope that Minnesota will get back to insisting on teacher preparation, and then let's get busy addressing the many other needs of our students. Thank you.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon. My name is Dr. Rhonda Bonstetter. I am a professor of education at Southwest Minnesota State University, and I am president of the Minnesota Association for Colleges of Teacher Education. MACTE is supportive of all paths to teacher licensure that require candidates to meet the standards required by our state's Professional Educator Licensure and Standards Board. This includes traditional four-year programs, two-year transfer pathways to four-year programs, non-conventional, alternative preparation, and licensure portfolio options. In each case, the candidates are required to provide evidence that they have mastered the standards for pedagogy and content knowledge. Thus, MACTE is in full support of this proposed change to tiered licensure, which removes the loophole that allowed candidates with 3 years of teaching experience on a Tier 2 license and not on an improvement process to move to a full professional Tier 3 license that was renewable indefinitely. This loophole allows candidates to move forward for full licensure without ever showing evidence of meeting any licensure standards, which should be completely unacceptable to parents and guardians of all Minnesota school children. House File 3800 maintains the option for candidates who choose not to seek teacher licensure through the completion of these other pathway routes to provide evidence of meeting the Pelsby standards through a licensure by portfolio option. This option is now matured to be a fully viable opportunity. Pelsby maintains a roster of trained professional reviewers and has a staff and timeline developed to support those reviews. Data obtained from Pelsby staff shows that as of July of 2018, 61 people had completed the portfolio option. Anyone teaching on a full-time Tier 1 or 2 license would have ongoing opportunities to use their daily experiences in the classroom to document evidence of meeting the licensure standards if desired. While this is not and should not be an easy process, it is a reflective, practical, and feasible option for those who choose not to pursue completion of coursework and field experiences to provide evidence of meeting the licensure standards. We thank you for your support of House File 3800.
Thank you. Let's see, next testifiers, those with concerns I have signed up, Sarah Shanley, Gary Amoroso, Daniel Sellers, Dr. Nijan Patters, Sonia Saylor. And I'll give you, the last group was about a minute under, but we'll still give you 10 minutes and at least time for each of you to complete what you want to say. So please state your name for the record and proceed.
Sarah Shanley, Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Sarah Shanley, and I'm speaking to you on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Career and Technical Administrators, who represent CTE administrators from across Minnesota. Thank you very much for allowing me to talk briefly about major concerns MACTA has with House File 3800. First, it's important to note that teachers of career pathways, such as law enforcement and cosmetology, do not have licensure standards, and therefore do not have teacher preparation nor the ability to obtain a license via portfolio. Cosmetology and law enforcement are also two examples of the strong professional development that we are doing in our school systems to ensure their success in the classroom. In addition, there are also other career and technical education licensure areas that do not have teacher preparation programs, therefore limiting their pathways to Tier 3 licenses. MACTA is also strongly opposed to any change in tiered licensure, most specifically the striking of lines 2.4 through 2.7 in House File 3800. By limiting the ability for a tier two teacher to move to Tier 3 through 3 years of successful teaching experience, eliminates pathways to permanent licenses for many in our career and technical areas, essentially relegating certain CTE and all career pathway instructors for which there are no other options to perpetual Tier 1 and providing zero stability to our teachers and programs. CTE has a teacher shortage, and nearly half of our CTE teachers were on Tier 1, Tier 2, or special permissions last year. The removal of this option would be devastating to our career and technical ed teacher recruitment and retainment. Our communities and our schools are working to meet employers' needs by growing and developing CTE programs across the state which need licensed CTE teachers. This change will have a long-lasting negative impact for students all around our state and ultimately the workforce of Minnesota. Madam Chair and committee, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Gary Amoroso, Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. I'm also speaking on behalf today of the AMSD, Association Metropolitan School Districts, the Minnesota Rural Education Association, and the Minnesota School Board Association. We all agree that we want what's best for our students. I don't think there's any disagreement on that. Much of what I heard from our colleagues earlier in the testimony, we would agree with. We need to do something about the environment of our educators, and we need to do something about the resources that our educators are provided in terms of pay and things, so that we agree upon. I think, as all of you know, this bill for tier licensure was passed in the spring of 2017. It actually began to be implemented July 1st of 2018, so we're in year two. So we had people come into the profession who came in under the guise of, in 3 years, if we have successful evaluations, we're not putting on plans of improvement, we will move to tier three. So to pull the rug out from under them now, I think is a question that we really have to consider. Is it fair to those individuals that in good faith came into the profession under statute? And to change it now, before they even have a chance to get through those 3 years, I think is something that we should be concerned about. One of the things that we're also concerned about is what's the impact on our students. If this pathway were to be eliminated, there's the potential that we would have additional programming that students are currently involved in that would be eliminated. These students only get the one shot at whatever grade level they're in. And by the eliminating programs, I don't think that's in their best interest either. I'm not saying that this system is perfect. I'm not saying that down the road there may have to be adjustments made. But to eliminate a pathway which has not even gone the full 3 years to even demonstrate what type of results we're getting, what type of evaluations are being done, how the administration and teachers feel about this, I think is very, very premature, and would ask that we not move forward with that section of House File 3800. With that, I thank you.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cheyenne Patters, and I'm a teacher with a Tier 2 license. I moved to the Twin Cities to pursue a doctoral degree in history at the University of Minnesota. Once I got my PhD, I decided to pursue a career in K-12 schools because I wanted the primary focus of my professional life to be teaching rather than research. I use the pedagogical training that I received as a graduate instructor as a foundation for building skills as a classroom teacher. Although I completed a traditional teacher training program and received a K-6 license, I quickly discovered that I meant to teach older students. Despite obtaining this official certification in the form of a license, all of my teaching has been in secondary social studies classes, a field in which I am not licensed. Through a combination of mentoring, professional development, and coaching, I've been a successful teacher. My students, the majority of whom have been students of color, English language learners, and eligible for free and reduced lunch, have performed well. Both they and their families have responded positively to me, and my performance evaluations have been consistently excellent. I can say with absolute certainty that I am a better high school teacher than I would ever be as a self-contained K-6 classroom teacher, even though I went through the traditional training program and received a Tier 4 license from the state. I say this not only as someone with years of teaching experience, but also as someone with years of experience coaching and evaluating other teachers. The current tiered system finally provides me with a path toward licensure in the field in which I actually teach. It gives me a chance at professional security within a public school setting. I have 3 post-secondary degrees in different social studies disciplines. I am a person of color, and I am committed to public education. I have taught at the university level, and I have spent years adapting this experience to provide rigorous college preparatory instruction to middle and high school students. The proposal under consideration today would require me to re-enroll in a traditional teacher preparation program in order to keep teaching. Ironically, because of my background and experience, I've actually been on degree-granting committees in the very programs that this bill would require me to enroll in. These changes would push me out of public schools. Instead, I would leave and go teach in elite, private, college prep schools where my background and experience are actually valued. This proposal would turn away qualified, sought-after teachers, and it's my fear that once the profession loses these individuals, they may be gone from teaching for good. I've spoken to you today as a teacher, but I'd like to close as a parent with a child in Minneapolis Public Schools. I am more interested in knowing if my daughter's teacher can implement best practices than I am in knowing if she learned those practices in a classroom, at a workshop, through a mentor, or with a coach. If we are truly committed to closing the achievement gap, if we are committed to diversifying the pool of classroom teachers, this is an important part of the solution. One way to think about this diversity is to create space for a diversity of experiences and to create diverse paths for obtaining a license. Thank you.
Thank you. State your name for the record, please, and proceed.
My name is Sonia Saylor. I'm the Director of Human Resources for Waconia Public Schools. I'm also the President-elect for the Minnesota Association of School Personnel Administrators.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me this opportunity to testify. Human resource professionals establish and oversee hiring processes in school districts with the intent of always selecting the most talented teachers. Helping our schools obtain the best teachers for every classroom is where we know we can have the largest impact on the achievements of our students. I'm here today to express MASPA's concerns about the proposed changes offered in House File 3800. This is only the second year that HR departments have implemented the new tiered licensure system. We believe that changes at this early stage will cause confusion for school districts and administrators working closely with currently licensed Tier 2 teachers. Many school districts have reached out to MASPA with their stories of teachers that are utilizing this alternative pathway. They report teachers that are excelling in their positions, many in their second year of teaching experience under this new law. Many also report the potential impact of the proposed change on their efforts toward creating a more diverse teacher workforce. We believe that qualified and trained school administrators are in the best position to ensure that all teachers are meeting the rigorous expectations set for them. This is an established part of the process of determining whether a teacher will achieve continuing contract rights, and it is taken very seriously. It is also important to note that we are talking about a very small percentage of teachers. Anoka-Hennepin, our state's largest school district, reports fewer than 1.5% of all teacher positions filled with Tier 1 or Tier 2 teachers. I ask that you trust school district administrators and HR professionals to fulfill our missions to help students learn and grow by ensuring that the best teachers are in our classrooms. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Saylor. Mr. Sellers, your folks are already over 10 minutes, but I want to give you a chance to speak. So if you can keep it brief, because then we're going to have Mr. Luizzi come down and then take member questions.
Great. Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chairs and members. Daniel Sellers with Ed Allies. Briefly, even though research is inconclusive about how important formal pedagogical training is to teaching, I'm not here to suggest that requiring it is bad policy. But I can say with confidence that keeping the Tier 2 to Tier 3 pathway open is even better policy. The research on the positive impacts of increasing teacher diversity is conclusive, and it's all the more important here in Minnesota. 20% of all teachers of color and indigenous teachers in Minnesota are currently teaching with a Tier 1 or Tier 2 license or with what's called a special permission. In real numbers, according to Pelsby, there are 790 teachers of color and American Indian teachers who would be impacted, 790 who would be impacted by this change. The proposed change in HF 3800 will take away an existing pathway to permanent licensure, making it more difficult for 20% of all educators of color and indigenous educators to remain in Minnesota classrooms. If we care about retaining the rich diversity that these teachers bring to the classroom each day and about creating a welcoming environment to bring even more teachers of color into Minnesota classrooms, more than we care about the adherence to any specific teacher prep philosophy, I ask you to keep the Tier 2 to Tier 3 pathway open. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Seller. Mr. Liuzzi, now see, I need a whole other session to get your name right. Please state your name for the record. Proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, Alex Liuzzi, I'm the Executive Director of the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board, otherwise known as PELSBY. As the state agency that implements tiered licensure, PELSBY would like to assist in this discussion regarding removing one of the five pathways to a Tier 3 license. While our board currently does not have a formal position on House File 3800, our perspective is that this bill would not negatively impact the progression through tiered licensure. Here's what we know. A Tier 3 license is a full professional license that can be used at any school in Minnesota and be renewed an unlimited amount of times. House File 3800 proposes removing one of the five pathways to that Tier 3 license, the pathway that requires only 3 years of teaching on a Tier 2 license without being placed on an improvement plan by your supervisor in those 3 years. There are four other pathways to a Tier 3 license, including many alternative pathways and licensure via portfolio. The difference between those four pathways and the one removed in House File 3800 is that the other four require evidencing to the state, Minnesota, or another state that you have met standards of effective practice of teaching, pedagogy standards, knowing the theory and practice of how students learn, how to assist that learning, how to plan for that learning, and how to engage learners. We also hear a narrative, we just heard it, that without this fifth pathway, we create barriers to increase teachers of color. However, there is no evidence, as this narrative suggests, that teachers of color are somehow inherently less equipped to meet the high standards that we place on our educators. Rather, research suggests that the barriers they face are external, financial, environmental. These are the barriers we should focus on removing if our goal is increasing teachers of color in Minnesota. Finally, please note that this change would not suddenly remove teachers from the classroom. An individual on a Tier 2 has 8 years on that Tier 2 license and requests more with good cause. Tiered licensure was created for clarity in licensure and to provide a clear progression toward a fully prepared teacher. Removing this pathway does not harm that goal. Pelsby is always available to answer any questions regarding recommended changes to licensure, including any of the testimony you heard today we could respond to as well.
Thank you, Mr. Liuzzi. Members, we have Erdahl, Jordan, Scott, Moeller. We have floor at 4:15. My plan is to leave by 4:10 and have this bill pass out. So please, members, keep your questions very brief. Representative, we've had a lot of discussion on this bill last year, and it's even narrower than it was last year. So Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and some comments. If I get to a question, I don't know. But real quickly, first, I've had a lot of different opinions about tier licensure over the years. I wasn't real supportive of it when it started, and I can't deny that maybe I still have questions about it. However, we have committed to do this, and it's important that we live up to commitments that we as a legislature make, and to let this play out and analyze it later. And there have been some promising things, I think, regarding having a higher percentage of teachers of color. But in a larger sense, I have long advocated for better training and better preparation and retention of our teachers. We have 12 weeks of student teaching. I don't know that that's enough. I don't think it is. The best systems in the world, Finland, for example, has a year-long student teaching program, which I did pass a bill for a pilot program a few years ago. And so I think that we should do a better job of preparing our teachers, making them ready to be teachers. I think we should do a better job supporting them through mentorship, which we'll be talking about later. And we've got a ways to go yet on this. I firmly believe that knowing how to teach is as important as knowing what to teach. And so with all of these conflicting thoughts in my head that he brought up today, I still am trying to focus and down the line propose solutions to all of this. And someday everyone will listen to me and do the things that I'm trying to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Representative Jordan.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I actually have a question for Dr. Patters and maybe Mr. Leezy.
Leezy. I always get it wrong. It takes a while. Go ahead, Representative Jordan.
Yeah, I have some more questions about this portfolio process. Dr. Patters, do you think it's possible for you to get a teaching license through this portfolio process instead of through this traditional teaching prep program?
I mean, I'm sure it's possible. I'm right, like educated and qualified. I think really, like for me, it's kind of like a threefold issue, right? One is like I already have demonstrated, right? Like I have already demonstrated mastery of these things. I've worked in multiple schools. I've been I've received consistently excellent evaluations. I've demonstrated my ability to generate student growth, right? Like I've taught a range of classes. And so if I have already demonstrated this to my school administration to their satisfaction, if I have already been granted the tier two license, right? Like under the understanding that in 3 years I would have a path to permanent licensure, then to ask me to do more seems a little unfair.
Representative Jordan?
Yeah, I don't have any other questions.
Thank you. Mr. Luizzi, maybe briefly, I don't know if you can explain it in 30 seconds. Can you explain the portfolio process briefly, just so we know?
Yeah, the license review portfolio process, we're a standards-based state. So an individual can submit evidence of how they met those standards through a portfolio. I just quickly to point out that a lot of narratives around our work have changed over the years. So, for example, I still get people that tell me it's impossible to move here if you're coming from another state as a teacher. That changed in 2015 thanks to the legislature, and it's now very easy to move here from another state. The portfolio is the same. The licensure via portfolio process we've been working on for many years. We provide trainings now to individuals, so it's not a difficult process. And, in fact, someone with these types of qualifications would be able to process fairly easy through it, including someone who's already had pedagogy standards. Someone who is new to teaching would have to do a pedagogy portfolio and the content. Dr. Patters would only need to do the content. It sounds like with the multiple degrees, it would be fairly simple.
Thank you. We have Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just not really a question, but just a couple of points. And I'm a little bit confused by the proponents of this bill that want to allow or put tier one licensees into the teachers union, because based on their testimony, about Tier 1 licensed teachers, these folks feel that they're highly unqualified teachers, so I'm confused as to why they'd want to protect them. But the other point I wanted to make was similar to what Dr. Patter said, and she probably said it better than I will say, but I don't believe that a student and that student's parents care if a teacher is Tier 1, 2, 3, or 4, as long as that child is learning and progressing and the achievement gap is closing. So I think this might be there might be a tendency here to overthink this. If you've got a successful teacher in front of a child, why would you want to make life more difficult for that teacher and possibly disincentivize them to stay and remain in the classroom? So I think we need to be very careful here and let this tiered licensure program that we passed a couple of years really get its feet on the ground and see what the effects are. And I think they've been so far very good. And I just don't want to take away an effective teacher just because they're not licensed the way that some people think they should be. Thank you.
Representative Kunesh-Podein, any comment?
I think when it comes to the choice of joining the bargaining unit as a first a Tier 1 teacher is certainly an option that a Tier 1 teacher could choose to or not to. Nobody's making them. Nobody's requiring them to. But it does give the Tier 1 teacher some extra help and assistance when they are already using the bargaining opportunities that have already been provided by the union. So the union negotiates their salaries, their benefits, keeps sure that the hours and the staff development is available. There's more of a bonus to it than it is a negative. And so we'd like to be able to, join them, bring them to the union, and allow them to join our union and participate in whatever level that they want to.
Ms. Ford, did you have something to add?
So Sarah Ford from Education Minnesota, and just to respond to that question, why would Education Minnesota want to protect Tier 1 teachers? This law was the first time the legislature created a body of teachers that was not in the teachers' bargaining unit, which is a very unique thing on its own. And so one question is, why did we not seek to protect those teachers at the very beginning? We want to protect those teachers very much. We're very, very concerned about the number of people coming into the profession and how we can get people into the profession. Our argument about tier three is that we have many, you can be many years at Tier 1 and Tier 2 to develop the proficiencies to show that you've met the standards of effective practice to move to Tier 3. This is not an argument that nobody should be allowed to step into a classroom. This is an argument that to get a full professional teaching license, you should be able to show that you've met the standards of effective practice.
Thank you. Representative Scott, quick follow-up, yeah, and then I have Representative Erickson, Representative Mueller. Members, we will be voting by 410.
Quickly, my understanding is that these Tier 1 teachers are only contracted for a year, and then their jobs are kind of up in the air, and that their job has to be posted as an opening to all other tiered licensed teachers. And so I don't see they were left out of being able to be in the bargaining unit for a reason, and that was because their contracts were so short term. And for them to pay, teachers union dues of $800 to $1,000 a year for 1 year, and because of the previous statements about how they have to reapply for their job, I think it just makes sense that they're not part of it. So that's my only comment. Thank you.
I think that if I could just respond to that, if a Tier 1 teacher is coming in and they don't have some of the protections and the support that our union provides them, it leaves them very vulnerable. Leaves them very vulnerable. If there was to be a complaint, if there was to be something that would happen, that Tier 1 teacher has no legal support or recourse. But with the union, we can support them and help them work through that. And let's just remember, this is a voluntary, you know, the union is voluntary. You can join the union. You don't have to join the union, but we would like to make it available as an extra support system.
Thank you, Representative. Very good point. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is for Mr. Luisi. Good afternoon. So is the board able to track the new tier ones with former community experts? In other words, I'm asking the community experts we had previously, since the 1980s actually, and in the 90s when I served on the Board of Teaching, we tightened it up. But are you able to track who was a community expert and who's now a tier one? Because we've had community experts for a long, long time, and they're no different. What we did is we gave them official status of a tier one.
Mr. Luzzi.
Madam Chair, Representative, as many of you are well aware, we are in the transition right now from our legacy licensure system to our new online system. And so we actually aren't at this point. What we were able to do a year ago was track how many non-licensed community experts didn't have a bachelor's degree and so wouldn't be able to move into a tier one. That was quite a drastic change. But at this point, we aren't. But as soon as those two systems merge, hopefully in the next 6 months, we would be able to track that data and how many years they had been teaching.
Representative Erickson, follow up?
Yeah, and I think there's an important point here because true in the 1990s, we tightened up the community expert. But in the licensure reform, we raised the standards for a tier one. So now they must have a Bachelor of Arts degree and then also follow all the other expectations that are laid out in the licensure law. So. Of course, I want to see tier two continue to be able to move into tier three because I think the experience that these candidates or teachers are having over those years is absolutely as good as student teaching because they're really, they have mentors for the most part, they have administrative review, and they are getting the best experience in the classroom because they are actually teaching their own students all the time and therefore have earned the right, I think, to move from the tier two to the tier three. So I hope that we're not going to be upsetting this reform until we've seen all of these facts play out. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Fuller, last comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if Sarah Ford could come back, and I'll ask my question while she's coming down. I think one of the opponents had indicated that research around teacher preparation was inconclusive. Yep. And I think we heard from a member who said, you know, they didn't think that parents really cared if a teacher was whatever, tier one, tier two, tier three. And I can tell you that as a parent with children in public schools, what I really care about is this research here that you provided to us that tells me that teacher preparation is correlated with student success. And I know it's a long document, it's hard to read while we're listening, but if you could just, is that true in the research and is it continuing to show that?
Ms. Ford. Madam Chair. So researchers have been able to study in every decade except the 80s for the past 60 years, have been able to study large numbers of underprepared or unprepared teachers and the academic results of their students and compare those to the academic results of students who are prepared. And that's because in all those decades except the 80s when we didn't have a teacher shortage and therefore there weren't big pockets of emergency hire teachers to study. Everybody was prepared, got a job, and the jobs were all filled by people who were prepared. There have been lots and lots of takes at, and they're all differently specific. They might look at fourth grade outcomes in a particular state that has a particular level of emergency hire or provisional license, different kinds of preparation. There are a couple of real controversial studies that have been published a lot around No Child Left Behinds and the moments when we had to define a highly qualified teacher. There have been a couple studies, some by Mathematica, that have been that would claim to have results that are really inconclusive. But if you look at the body of research by peer-reviewed academic literature that looks at whether or not teachers make a better difference when they know what they're talking about, the answer is overwhelmingly yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Ford. Members, thank you so much for letting us go a few minutes over. I'm going to renew the motion that House File 3800 be placed on the general registry. Is there any further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. House File 3800 is recommended for placement on the General Register. Members, a few quick announcements. Reminder that the Education Policy Symposium is this Friday, starting at 8 a.m. in this room. Lunch is going to be provided, and it goes to 3:30. There is a really phenomenal agenda that was set out that I hope you all attend. Representative Erickson, you had a comment?
Madam Chair, not a comment about your announcement, but I would like to move reconsideration of House File 1116 so that the instruction to the reviser can be made clear that we need to correct the misleading relating clause, as it says that this is making a technical change to provisions for licensure, and that's an inaccurate title. So I'd like to move reconsideration and then vote again to move it to wherever.
Representative Erickson, can you there was a lot of noise in the room, so can you repeat that you want to change which clause in the title?
I'm moving for reconsideration of House File 1116 so that the instruction to the reviser to correct the misleading relating clause, which is stating that it's making technical changes to provisions for licensure, and that's not, I think, the meat of this proposal.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Erickson, I remember I was having this conversation before, and I'm sorry that I didn't recall that from last year. I'm happy to have us bring this back up. I believe there doesn't have to be a vote to take it from the table, if I can remember my rules right. So we'll bring House File 1116 back up. Will somebody, Representative Erickson, would you like to make the motion?
Yes, I will move that the reviser be instructed to correct the misleading relating clause of House File 1116.
Okay. Representative Erickson, we've had some suggestions from a nonpartisan staff that we could actually take care of this right now by striking the word technical, since they are just changes. Representative Erickson, would you be okay with that motion?
Is it okay?
Yeah, I think that.
Or would you prefer another adjective in there besides technical?
I think it's best we trust the reviser to make the change. The reviser's going to know. So I think not striking technical is not enough.
Representative Erickson has moved that House File 1116 be moved to the General Registry with the instruction that the nonpartisan staff amend the title accordingly. Any questions on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? House File 1116 has been moved to the general registry with suggestion that the nonpartisan staff amend the title accordingly. Members, other announcements we have. Don't forget, Education Policy Symposium this Friday, 8 a.m., this room. We are meeting next Tuesday during our regular time, but also Tuesday night, March 10th. We will be posting it soon, starting at 6 p.m., to have a hearing on mental health, and we have two bills that night. We may also need to reconvene the evening of March 11th, but hopefully not. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.